testimony. The topic I am speaking of today is review and renew Buddhism for 21st century. This is really big subject, so for me it is too big title, but as best as I can try to talk about it. I don't want to get into deeply into Buddhist history in order to review the Buddhism. And also, they asked to renew the Buddhism. I think there is nothing to renew Buddhism itself, but renew ourselves, human beings, for the 21st century. This is most important point. Because Buddhism is mainly very conservative. In order to maintain the essence of Buddha's teaching, after century after century, this, if you forget essence of the Buddha's teaching, I think Buddhism doesn't work in every country for a long time. Wherever Buddhism goes, anyway, the Buddha's ancestors try to transmit that essence of Buddha's teaching. That's why Buddhism flourished in every country whenever it goes. To China, to Tibet, to Japan, anywhere Buddhism grows and helps the individual culture, individual people's life. So, from this point, I think there is nothing to renew Buddhism in itself, but renew the human beings who takes care of Buddhism. That is most important point for us. So, and also the 21st century, I think the all sciences, philosophy, psychology, religion, physics, and biology advance very much in order to create a better life, better world. And by researching the depth of human life, human world. So very naturally, I think science of, for instance, physics is no longer one of the sciences separate from Buddhism. Buddhism has very close relation with physics or the biology and the many, many sciences. For instance, I think in ancient time, Dogen Zenji mentions about the moment and the 6 billion, the 400 million 98,088 instant a day, or a moment consists of 70 instances like this. And then Dogen Zenji mentions, if you don't believe this moment, you cannot arouse you cannot arouse body-mind. In other words, you cannot seek for the truth. You cannot take care of human life with deep understanding and share your compassion with all sentient beings. That is body-mind. So you cannot arouse body-mind. But lately, I think physics already finds the most shortest period of moment are much more than understanding of moment in Buddhism. By this, in virtue of discovering the most shortest period of a moment, we can go to the moon and we can research the small world, very small world. We can see this very small world and understand it. So I think from this point, I think the physics is no longer separate from Buddhism, because the physicist already knows shortest period of time and how to use the shortest period of time. So very naturally, by using the shortest period of time, almost we can control the human world, including other planets. So very naturally they believe strongly physics is best way, best things to control the human life, or to create a better world, a better life. That's not only the physics, but also biology and psychology and etc. So, in other words, as a scientist, other sciences are invading to Buddhist territory or religious territory. Do you understand what I mean? So, very naturally, you cannot deal with religion or Buddhism separate from sciences. In the ancient time, religion is already separated. But from now on, you cannot separate. So from this point, I think the religion, Buddhism is still Buddhism, and Buddhism tried to maintain the essence of the Buddhism, how to apply to modern society, modern life. This is most important. So I think the human beings in the 21st century could be very confused. You know, who is or what is the best things, or which can give compassion and the kindness and the peace and brighten the human life and fills human lives. Lubrication of the car. Religion is kind of a lubrication for the machine, for the human life. This is very important for us. So I think in the more and developing the sciences toward the 21st century, I think the human beings could be very confused. So I think from now on, we have to begin to study the Buddhism very deeply and understand the human being, human world, instead of dealing with mystical religious stuff. By the researching a very deeply human life, human being, then Buddhism becomes great, the great things which we can we can display it in the universal market, not small religious market, universal market. Then we should let the people to make a choice of Buddhism and by their individual human being. That is very important. So first I would like to take a little look at the beginning of Mahayana Buddhism in the first century. In the first century, I think it is pointed out that the Mahayana began to grow before and after first century, probably before first century. The first century is the age that many scriptures were produced and translated into Chinese. For instance, one of the great translators named Lokarakusha. Lokarakusha, Lokarakusha, came to China in 147 and translated many Mahayana Buddhist scriptures into Chinese. So from this point, already before 147, there were already many Buddhist scriptures. So at those days, the movement of translating the Buddhist scriptures was very popular in China. That was the beginning of translation of Buddhist scripture into Chinese. And also the first century was the age that they were deeply researched and practiced and summarized. That's why most of Mahayana Buddhism was established in the first century or so. And the Mahayana Buddhism tried to center on the thought of Bodhisattva. Before first century, Bodhisattva was just for the Shakyamuni Buddha's previous life. before Gautama Siddhartha became a Buddha, and then his life in the previous life, in other words, in the past life, before he became a Buddha, was called Bodhisattva. But in Mahayana, in the first century, I think Bodhisattva was popular and also the Bodhisattva implies to everyone who can have. So Bodhi means enlightenment, and Sattva means being. So historically, traditionally, Bodhisattva was assumed that the person who seeks for the truth or the enlightenment. But strictly speaking, I think particularly according to Buddha's teaching, Bodhi is not separate from sattvas. So Bodhi is sattva. Because Buddha mentions we are Buddha. So Buddha is not separate from us. So Bodhisattva is, we are already Bodhisattva, enlightened being called Buddha. That is the meaning of the Bodhisattva in Mahayana. What I am interested in is that the movement of Mahayana spirit germinated from the lay Buddhists in those days. So if you read the Saddhama Pundarika Sutra, and behind Saddhama Pundarika Sutra, I think you can see a kind of a movement of Bodhisattva's life. So at those days, monks, tried to be the head of the pagoda, usually monks should be taking a trip all over the India. They couldn't have any particular place to live. But those days in the first century, I think some of monks tried to be the head of the pagoda, stupa. That kind of things occurred if you read the Saddhama Pundarika Sutra. And also, there was no discrimination of the practice between men and women, monks and laity at those days. Completely, the laity and monks and the men and women gathered and practiced together. This is a brief outlook of the beginning of the Mahayana in the first century. When you look at the Mahayana in the first century, I think you can find the similarity of American Buddhism, the Mahayana Buddhism with the American Buddhism. Since I came to United States, I think I have been practicing with American, we have practiced together, men and women, and also no discrimination between the monks and priests and the lay Buddhists and practice together. Some confusion is there, but this is a reality, so we try to practice in such circumstances. And then the Mahayana, later the Mahayana created the separation between the separation from a monk's life. The Mahayana Buddhism set up a monk's life separate from laity. Later first centuries. So I think the same apply to American Buddhism now. We don't know which way to go. We don't know what the real Buddhism is because translated Buddhist scriptures come into the America, translated at random into English, not systematically. So people, Americans, try to read the Buddhist scripture like a person who drawn to death, finding the straw and grasp it. Do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's why they know, the Americans know pretty well about Buddhism, but they don't know actually in deep inside. I think still they're very confused because of too many Buddhisms, too many kind stuff, religious stuff. So I think in a sense I can give a great sympathy to American Buddhism, but I can't help it. So in such circumstances we try to walk step by step anyway. So in order to walk step by step and in the confused circumstances of American Buddhism, most important things we have to practice is spirit and heart of the Bodhisattva's life. That is most important for us. Of course, Bodhisattva's life is based on wisdom and compassion. Wisdom is, simply speaking, Bodhisattva are wise enough to see into life with a capital L. That we are caused to be alive by all other beings. Do you understand? We are caused to be alive. Not we are alive. Not we are alive by the effort. Of course, we do. But on the other end, in order to know the large scale of human life, I think we should realize that the another aspect of which we are caused to be there, alive by all other beings. This is wisdom. And compassion is that the Bodhisattva put the comfort of others before their own convenience, which means it means that they don't manifest themselves only in a selfish view or in a selfish manner or rough behavior. Always they are thinking of others and are concerned about how to help them before concerning their bodies, their life, their own life. This is a compassion. In other words, that no one will dispute the fact that kindness is a fine virtue. Particularly, the teacher or a friend who lives most vividly in our memory is a person who was very kind and gentle, considerate, and charitable. One of my friends, Yokoi Roshi, was using the language very roughly and carelessly, criticizing me and putting me down so much, but whatever he did, I think I found that there is a very deep kindness there. Deep kindness there. So that is a great teacher for me. So your teacher or your friends who really their lives most vividly in your memory is a person who was very kind, gentle, and considerate and charitable. Even in everyday human life, this kind of kindness is important. Compassion, the much more compassion is very important for us. So, the on the other end, if you look at the individual life in reality, we can very often find the human life based on something opposite to the bodhisattva's life. That life is kind of egoistic, not compassionate, very individualism, and always thinking of our own life, and always we confine ourselves into small our own shell. But in Buddhism, I think even though we think so in terms of Buddha's teaching, I think life is kind of selfish, but this selfishness is the unconscious, one of the unconsciousness. Not only the one person or two person, everyone has this the selfishness, the source of egoism, source of selfishness. And also, it only vibrates the minutely. It is tremendously the obstinate self, because in the unconscious level, it's always working constantly. So regardless of whether you are conscious of it or not. So I think this kind of selfishness is not the kind of the beings as object for your perception or knowledge. It is kind of energy there. It is kind of energy. So that is called manas. Manas. And also the human body, we use very often the karma. In Buddhism, we call karma Vipaka in Sanskrit, karma means the karma, the action. You know pretty well karma. The life as a result, what you did in the past. So that is a vipaka. But you did good or bad in the past, but as a result, the life is completely neutral. Okay? That is called vipaka. So your life is kind of beyond your evaluation or judgment, good or bad, right or wrong, because your life is completely neutral. So that is karma vipaka. When you are in the first moment when you are in the mother's womb, that moment is called kalam. Kalalam in Sanskrit, K-A-L-A-L-A-M, Kalalam. Kalalam means the one point or one moment when dwelling in the mother's womb. And the Buddhist mentions at that moment, I think you have already three things. One is lifespan. Second is warmth, W-A-R-M-T-H, warmth. And third, consciousness. So first one is lifespan. Means a longevity, kind of longevity. Which has been the continuous from the past and to the future. So longevity or the lifespan is something continuous. This is already you have. Okay, when in the first moment when dwelling in the mother's womb. And the next, warmth is kind of heartiness, or quality of being intimate and attached. Or I think the warmth is kind of idea by which the lifespan, something continuous from the past to the present to the future, and also conscious world put together, come together. So warmth is a kind of power. Well, what exists around the lifespan and the conscious world. If you read the creation in Rig Veda, I think Rig Veda mentions about warmth. That warmth is kind of energy which exists around the origin of the material and origin of a spirit, and that energy led to the birth. Come together and work together and create something. That is a warmth in Rig Veda. So I think this is also same applied to this warmth, idea of this warmth. And consciousness is already our mind, conscious world is regarded as the human consciousness and also universal consciousness. in the Buddhism, consciousness is explained in many ways. So those three are they already in this moment, and that moment is embryo, which exists in that moment, is called personal body. So your personal body is already connected with consciousness and also lifespan, which means something continuous from the past to the present to the future, and also great energy there. Warmth, heartiness, you know, you can share, you can help others. So that is a personal body. So in the Buddhism, personal body is not the personal body you believe as a stinky body, you know. So body, that's why this body is very important. Body is a Buddha. Body is a Buddha. So, in other words, the human personal body is your personal body, but simultaneously it's connected with the universe, functioning of the universe, the eternities. That is a personal body. So very naturally, what we have to do is the universal energy or universal's the aspect of universal aspect of the human life should be manifested with the human body, this human body. According to Buddhistic term, I think Dhammakaya Buddha is manifested with Nirmanakaya Buddha. Nirmanakaya Buddha means physical Gautama Siddhara. With the Gautama Siddhara, then Dhammakaya, truth, can be manifested. At that time, our body can be free from karmic life and free from individual hindrances, and we become opening self. We trust in opening self. We realize life of opening self. So that is most important. That's why I said the universal life must be manifested with our body. So in order to manifest the universal life with the body, in everyday life, I think there are a few practices we should take into account. One is throwing away arrogance. Arrogance is always to believe strongly, my life is mine. And if you believe your life is yours, and others also believe that others' life is others. Same applies to scientists. Scientists believe strongly that their life is theirs. And the biologist also believes strongly their own lives. You know? So very naturally, religions, the physics and the biology, psychology, all exist, but believing strongly their own life, controlling by their own, you know, power or energies, you know, knowledge, human knowledge. This is very dangerous for us. So very naturally, the we have to realize this arrogance and be in humility, humble. That is really a practice called development of wisdom. Okay? This is a wisdom. By wisdom, you can practice this, and by this practice, you can develop wisdom. And second, I think before I mentioned, we should think of others, we should put others' life in one's place. Excuse me, we should put our life, put the other's life in our place. Okay. In other words, when you think of others before your own convenience, this is bodhisattva practice. Not only the bodhisattva practice, because in the 100,000 years ago, it is pointed out that Homo sapiens, as ancestor of human being, started to perform funeral service for dead, thinking of others' life. So I think if you think of others performing of the funeral service, that is simultaneously to recognize a self-existence, admit self-consciousness, self-existence. Do you understand this one? If you consider it of others, that is simultaneously considered of you. In other words, you admit the presence of your existence. So that's why you can see this in others' life. But this is not the new way of human life. Already the 100,000 years ago, Homo sapiens started to this kind of way of life. But now in the modern age, I think the people killed others very easily, and for example, the discussing, arguing the accident on the freeways, and somebody shoot, others, one person shoot, others, and kill him. That is all very often happens in the modern age. So I think that if you continue to do this, I think you completely lose the bodhisattva's life. So, in order to think of others very deeply and considerately and charitably, I think this is not the a matter of discussion, but the practice. We have to practice it. Not only human being, but also particularly in Zen Buddhism, not only the human beings, but also all things. Tables, cushions, and the toilet papers, all things we have to be considerate of many things. So we do practice and with a gassho when you go to sleep, and chanting the verse of the sleep, And when you have a meal, we chant our Buddhist sutra. And this kind of a simple actual practice is a great way of manifesting universal life with our body, with our body. So this is a very simple practice. And then the one flower opens with five petals, forming a fruit which ripens of its own accord. As a flower blooms, its five petals open. We cannot tell which comes first, which comes later. This one flower is the Buddha's world, and the five petals are grasses, trees, birds, fish, each single event in our daily lives, and so on. When grasses and trees are received as that which is alive and is caused to be alive in the universal universe, prior to an analytic understanding of them, then we can be impressed by their lives. This is called Buddha's life. The same applies to each single event in our everyday lives. Each event could be taken care of as Buddha's life and not dealt with from a selfish viewpoint or with careless behavior. We should learn a pious way of life in which each worldly thing is held kindly as Buddha's life, and our arrogance, which is based on limited human knowledge and carried us with us, is thrown away. When we handle each single aspect of our daily living with a warm spirit and heart, the Buddha's life is manifested with our body. Within this practice, there is a vivid path which helps one's total personality grow and mature. An ancient teacher said that this practice is a way of handling one's life in which one continues to walk quietly in the mist and find that without being aware of it, one's dress has become completely wet. In moving toward the 21st century, since science, culture, and many things in one's daily life will endlessly advance for the sake of creating a better life, better world. However, I wonder if peace and bliss can be found in the process of their advancement. All people in the universe should seriously consider how one can peacefully walk hand in hand with all beings. This is my statement. And in the beginning, I mentioned what we should renew is not to renew Buddhism, but renew human life. But in order to renew human life, I don't think there is a particular special practice. But this is everyday life. In everyday life, we can find anyway practice by which universe and truth can be manifested with this body. At that time, you can really feel appreciation and many thanks to all sentient beings. And sometimes we have to practice in the monastery, sometimes we have to go to the church and temple and participate in the Sunday service, and etc. This is a particular practice. Basic practice for us. For instance, if you want to practice shooting arrow, the blue practice the what would you say, practice arrow
archery.
I think your target is a stable in front of you and shoot it. Or even a gun, if you shoot, I think the basic practice is master basic practice, your target is always stable in front of you and shoot it. Without having this basic practice, and immediately if you use a gun toward moving target, it's very dangerous for us. The confusion come up, sometimes hurting people. So in everyday life, we can practice. Be kind to the cushion and tables and toilet papers, we can do it. But still, sometimes confusion there. So how can practice applies to everyday life? In order to do this, I think we need to have a basic practice of going to the temple and church on Sunday and chanting, participate in the Sunday service. Anyway, and listen to Buddha's teaching. This is a basic practice. Sometimes monastery, we stay there and practice. Okay. That's it. Do you have some question?
Hey. You're making a point that in the 21st century human beings maybe are becoming more obstinate because...
Stubborn. Or stubborn.
Because technology...
Mm-hmm. Yes, more stubborn. They become more stubborn.
They become more arrogant.
Arrogant. Yes. Right. Yes. That's why we have to offer certain circumstances where they can manifest and they can realize the bigger scale of the world through their own research, you know, because even though they become stubborn more and more by the researching of, by the belief, strong belief of their accomplishments, you know, but realities would rather be reversed sometimes. By stubbornness, they can realize the bigger scale of the world, you know. So as best as we can, we try to give compassion over them and offer the certain circumstances where they can still feel bigger scale of the world. That is living together in peace and harmony. Is that clear?
Can you expand a little bit more on what you mean by being caused to be alive by all other beings? Did you say that was wisdom?
Oh, wisdom, you can see it with wisdom. This is an analogy. Your breath is always, you take a breathing. you take breath every day, even though you sleep, even though you don't pay attention to it, always breathing is going and your heart is working. Well, who take care of this? Your effort? Yes, your effort, because you try to keep your body good shape, you know, and exercising itself, that is your effort. But on the other end, there is something more than your effort. Your heart is moving. That is, I say, the heart is caused to be alive. Is that clear? So, as a whole, human beings, not only human beings, trees, birds, all sentient beings are caused to be alive. That is called Buddha's life. Buddha's life.
Is that understanding interdependent?
Yes, they are according to the teaching, yes. It's the dependent co-origination, yes. But that is the practically. It's a teaching, but the practically we should do it. That is everyday life, we have to do it, you know. That is appreciation. That what this table is, the being as well as our life, you know.
You mean acknowledge it?
Yes, acknowledge it. So deal with this table with kindness and considerate, you know, being considerate and charitable to it. That is handling this table, you know, carefully. Not carefully means slowly and etc. You know, screw. We would say meticulously.
What does care?
With concentration. With concentration. Careful attention means with full concentration, wholeheartedness. You try, deal.
Seems like concentration is involved with thought process. Seems like what you're talking about is more of an awareness.
Awareness and awareness simultaneously, it becomes practice. So of course concentration, the consciousness involved. Because if you see this when you want to deal with this table, consciousness already involved. Because you see it, consciousness see it, this table. But consciousness is very complicated. Not simple work because it's connected with your aridity and education and emotions and judgment, evaluations, many things connected. That's why if you see it immediately, you judge it, and then next and the emotional judgment and feeling coming up, you know. So finally we don't use this table, you know, with wholeheartedness. Do you understand what I mean? So consciousness is already involved. Without consciousness you cannot live in this world.
Seems like if you think too much about being careful, then more judgments come up.
That is you play with your consciousness. So you have to let it go. So simple as you can, you have to use the consciousness. As simple as you can, you should do it and then let it go. That's practice. But usually we do with wholeheartedness, and then we judge ourselves, we judge this result. And then, what should I do? We should work more harder, you know, and then we do it. And then we judge it. That kind of things happens always. So that finally we are very confused, nervous, you know, exhausted. So all you can do is, with wholeheartedness, deal with this now, then let it go. You all open. You should open. And then, next moment, you just do. With new spirit, new, fresh, refreshing feeling. So we always, there is a two practice. So holding and let it go. Holding, let it go. Holding means see this table. And then do it. And then let it go.
When you talk about concentration, you're just talking about a momentary kind of thing?
Momentary, yes. Momentary concentration must be alive. So momentary concentration is always new. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm. The general Buddhist person, would you say their life is a little bit more involved around ceremony and not so much
Well, that is a little bit complicated than the I cannot know exactly. But life must be simple is important. So if a human being renewed, then we can handle the Buddhism as simple as we can. So I think the first important thing is that we should be renewed. Don't you think so?
Right. So not really criticizing Buddhist ceremony or something else.
No. No. Funeral service in Japan, funeral service and memorial service are criticized by many people because funeral service, memorial service becomes more and more the business, you know. So they don't like it. So finally, recently, they have a funeral service without the priest and using the temple, using the hotel, and just like a Christian, you know, more than Christian, you know. They don't use anything, just putting flowers, you know, around and decorating and pictures there, and that's it. That kind of things happen in Japan. But a funeral service is a funeral service. I think point is how to use this funeral service, because already 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, already our ancestors, you know, started to this, the burial services, you know. But I don't think it's necessary to maintain it. But I want to maintain that spirit of, you know, being considerate of others. That is most important. That is a funeral service, okay? Memorial service. Because it's very difficult to manifest this consideration or charitableness. It's very difficult to manifest. That's why through the services, through the ritual, we can manifest. Okay?
What do you mean when you talk about longevity?
Longevity is a continuation. Forever. That is a longevity. That is called jumyo in Japanese, lifespan. You know, lifespan is a little bit limited, don't you? If you use the lifespan. But longevity is, the jumyo is not the lifespan. Endless life. Ju is longevity. Myo is life. So something continues from past to the present to the future. This is longevity, eternity. Eternal continuation.